Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that does not make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new here today, I want to welcome you today. And I always call it God's magnificent AA, the program that saved my life and it's going to save yours too, if you're willing to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy into everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 24 years. And people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job, and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job of mine, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Paul and the committee for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes. I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is to talk to my sponsor. And Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes this morning. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, and was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of that as I stand here this morning. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally complete trials as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks, and I talked to him before he left town on Thursday, and he said, "Where are you going this weekend?" And I told him, he said, "Well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here and I welcome you and I hope that you stay in. Then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do. And that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today, you guys. Did not used to be there with me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I could not even describe it. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today. And sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. Had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to. It's because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice. Although I really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought my knees into disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but not stopped me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I learned to control and enjoy my drinking. Their persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about, many of us pursuit in the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of appearance. I got sober almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous as I stand here today. I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date. And there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people who had to go out and smoke dope when I got sober. And you know, if you're smoking marijuana in this room today, you are not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would tell you right this minute. And I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old-timer if you don't believe me. And if I had to change my date, then by God, so do you. But anyway, I got my current sponsor. And I tried to explain to him that where I'm from in Nebraska, you can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. He rather quickly pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We have one date here to get my date changed. And I was just smart aleck when I got my current sponsor. And I said, "Where does the book mention pot?" He said, "The book does mention pot." And I said, "Clancy, I have read that book. It's not talk about marijuana in that book." And he said, "If I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety and never argue with me again?" And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, "Died by musket or by pie." I said, "That is not what that means." He said, "Quite frankly, my dear, I don't care what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date." And And my life has flourished, I got to tell you guys. But I'm delighted to be here tonight, this morning. I'm also delighted that you don't have a glass plume. You can see your speaker. I had this terrible experience on the East Coast. I was out there giving a talk, and my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people. And they had this glass plume. You could actually see the speaker, and that makes me nervous anyway. And I had this black suit on with this wraparound skirt, and the button came down. I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor. And it was too late. It was on the floor. But you guys, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to wear underwear, and thank God some. Come on, I'll tell you. It's also taught me to take action. I just picked up that skirt and kept right on talking. What else are you going to do? But anyway, you guys, this has been without a doubt the best 2 years of my sobriety, and I want to share that here with you today. You know, if you'd asked me a year ago, New Year's Eve, are your amends made in Alcoholics Anonymous? I would have said yes, and that had been the absolute truth for me. I made $6,000 out of debt in this program. I owe nobody nothing, no verbal amends, no financial amends. I'm home free here. I just have a God in my life, have a sponsor, work with others, go to meetings, there are 3,000 things we do to stay sober. Looks like I'm going to be okay and stuff, and our book says that more will be revealed, folks. And I flew to Kansas City, Missouri a year ago on New Year's Eve to give an AA talk, and this big dinner dance thing, so they asked me to come. So anyway, air traffic control to hell for whatever reason, so we were circling the airport, and I looked out the airplane window, and I spied the Hyatt Regency Hotel. I thought, oh my God, there's the Hyatt, and I remember something I'd done about 35 years ago. You know, I read my inventory to my sponsor. I'd not mentioned this for whatever reason. I'd done so much of this sort of thing, it was no big deal, I guess, but I didn't really remember it, so I had to tell my sponsor. So I picked up the phone and called him, and he said, well, get over there and make amends for you. You probably gave the place a bad name. But anyway, 35 years ago, on Easter morning, I found myself in the Hyatt Regency Hotel glass elevator, stark naked in Kansas City, Missouri. And the elevator landed on the first floor, and the door opened up, and here was this family standing in their Easter clothes. And I never forget the look on these people's faces as long as I live. And I thought, well, if I have time, I'll get over there and get that done. I did not have time to get that done. That committee kept me really, really busy and stuff, so I was going to be there for 24 hours. So we were at the airport on New Year's Day to come back to Los Angeles, and my flight was canceled. I thought, great, I got 5 hours to kill, go to the Hyatt and try to find somebody to talk to, although I definitely didn't find anybody on New Year's Day to talk to, and boy, was I wrong about that. I sent the manager of the Hyatt Regency Hotel, and I told him what I'd done. He laughed. He said, Karen, stop. I have to tell you a funny story. He said, 35 years ago, my dad was manager of the Hyatt at that time. We were here having Easter brunch, and he said, you have to take the glass elevator upstairs to the brunch area, and the door opened up, and a naked woman got off. And he said, I was only 7 years old. I'd never seen a naked woman before. And I said, well, I'm sorry I had to be your first one, but take her everything you can get her. And he said, and guess what? Mom and Dad are here this week. And I thought, oh, wonderful. He said, yeah, they're celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. I put them in the honeymoon suite. Let's have them come down and meet you. And I thought, let's not, you know. But we don't say that. We just go along. And I said, whatever you want to do will be fine with me. So Mom and Dad came down. I thought, my God, they're probably 150 years old. All walkers will probably have a heart attack when they find out who I am. And boy, was I wrong about that. I found the loveliest people I have ever met before in my life. They laughed. They said, Karen, we talked about you for years in the bars of the Hyatt Regency. And I thought, yeah, I bet you did too. And I said, I'm so sorry I embarrassed you and your family here all those years ago. What can I do to make that right? And they said, just don't ever do it again. I said, you know what? I can't think of any more disgusting than a 59-year-old woman getting out of a glass elevator stark naked. I don't know if y'all are taking that path anytime soon. So as I stand here today, my amends are made in Alcoholics Anonymous. They ain't midnight yet, folks. You never know what's going to happen around here. And a year ago in May, I was over in Laughlin, Nevada. I spoke at the Tri-State Roundup. If you guys haven't experienced that conference, my God, it's a fabulous event. They get about 6,000-7,000 people this thing. And we were hanging around the casino on Thursday night waiting for the meeting to start. And I hit a $10,000 slot is what happened. And I was to experience every promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in about 5 seconds flat. I was to know a new freedom and new happiness, and fear of financial insecurity left me temporarily. If you're new here today, that is not how you get the promises in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I swear to God, I got them on. And Don Laughlin happened to be in the hotel, so he came down to say hi to me. Actually, they want their money back is what they want. And he said, what are you doing here this weekend? I told him, I'd love to hear the AA speakers. Can I come here to your talk? And I said, well, it's your hotel, wherever you want to, I guess. And by God, he was in line the very next night. And he said, are you sure we can't extend your stay? And I said, I'm positive. So I'm happy to report here this morning. I brought that 10 grand back to L.A. I paid my car off with it. And I am truly debt-free in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is a great position to be in, let me tell you guys. I never wish again ever to pay $86,000 back again as long as I live. It took me 18 years to do that. It's like paying for dead horses everywhere. But you know what? I am so glad I paid that money back. And I am not a martyr up here. I didn't want to pay pay one damn penny back. You don't know the truth, but my sponsor told me, pay the money back or get yourself a different sponsor, Karen. I don't lose my sponsor, so I paid the money back. And I resented every minute, if you want to know the truth. But, you know, after a couple of years, I will tell you, I started really feeling good about myself. So if you're heavily in debt here, it's just a matter of time and you'll be out, let me tell you. But I found out at 24 years of sobriety, I really don't need that much, if you want to know the truth. I sure as hell don't need to get credit card debt again. But so anyway, it's been a great couple of years of my sobriety and stuff. And, you know, I come from a wonderful home there in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I want you to know that. And my mother wants you to know it too, I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 13 years ago, and God, I miss her so much, I can't begin to tell you guys. And boy, you only have one, folks, and when they're gone, they're gone. And I've made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship the last few years of her life and stuff, but I just missed her terribly. And I have to tell you guys a funny story. Not that my mom died, of course. I was back in Nebraska last August to visit my kids and my grandkids and stuff, and I told my eldest son, I'm going to go out to Grandma's grave and put some flowers down. I said, where's your other grandmother buried? I was not there for my ex-mother-in-law's funeral. And he said, well, Mom, just mark off 15 rows from Grandma's grave. There's Grandma Lynn's grave. And I said, okay. So it's a little bitty tiny graveyard, and it was overcast in Nebraska. It had been raining all day, and I told him I'd speak at their Lano Club at 5:30. It was already 10 after 5, and I thought, I really got to move right along here. So I put the flowers down on my mom's grave and marked off 15 rows. There was my ex-mother-in-law's grave. I put the flowers down, and I backed up, and I found myself in an 8-foot grave, you guys, and I could not get out of that damn thing. Let me tell you something, folks. When you're in it, you're not getting out of it. Trust me. And I thought, how in the hell did this happen to me? But apparently the grave diggers in Nebraska thought to themselves, well, it's been raining all day. Nobody's out here. Let's go to dinner. We'll come back and do all the stuff later. They put up a tarp and a caution sign, a thing to hold the casket. It's basically impossible to fall in the grave. But I was in this grave, and I thought, I got to speak at that meeting in 20 minutes. What am I going to do? What do? You start screaming, help is what you do. And about 10 minutes later, this old lady walked over the grave. She's old, but I'm not, right? And she says to me, I don't think you're supposed to be in there. And I thought, stupid woman. I didn't say that, however. I need that one in my pocket that particular moment. And I said, have you got a cell phone by any chance? And she says, you know, I don't. And I said, can you go up the office, tell them to get a ladder, call the fire department, what the hell they got to do to get me out of here? But tell them not to run the sirens. It's not an emergency or anything. And here they come, 6 Lincoln, Nebraska fire trucks with their sirens going, 3 Lincoln, Nebraska police cars with their sirens going, and reporters of all damn things. And I said, don't you dare put my name in the paper. And they said, well, we have to report the fire call. We won't put your name in the paper. And I said, you better see that you don't. There it was Monday morning, California woman falls in 8-foot grave, Karen. I can't believe they did that, but you never know what's going to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I will have you old-timers know, I have been taught to show up for my commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got that meeting at exactly 5:29 p.m., and dress, mud, and all. And the people said to me, they said, Karen, why do you have mud on your dress? I said, don't even go. You don't even want to know, trust me. But you never know what's going to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people to stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact he was an alcoholic. And whether he ever found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give anything in the world if my father were alive today, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Ra-Ra in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap, and made straight A's, never cracked a book, and I made straight F's, never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired and teaches school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very, very much today, and I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who was a fighter pilot in the Navy for many, many years. My brother retired 6 years ago in August and did 9/11 in Iraq and so forth. He's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother is really old to be a fighter pilot. You guys, he's 52 years old. And we were growing up, I thought he was such a dork, I can't begin to tell you. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment to me, if you want to know the truth. And today I'm so proud of that man, I cannot begin to tell you. You wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane, but neither one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you know the truth. They're high successful people, and they bore me to tears. I love them, but they bore me to tears. And I have a couple kids who are 45 and 46 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want the truth. But you know what? Those couple of jerks that give me five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you have ever seen before in your life. And those grandbabies have never seen their grandmother drink, and I hope to God that they never do. But, you know, five of my grandkids, they're all just very, very highly successful little kids and stuff, and I don't know where it came from. It didn't come from their fathers, if I can tell you right now. But anyway, my youngest son got a phone call about 7 years ago, and from St. Louis, Missouri, from Budweiser, and they wanted to train my little grandson for the Olympics, you guys. So they sent him down to Norman, Oklahoma. He's been down there for about 4 years now, and you know, our book says that great events will come to pass for us and countless others, and I want to share a great, great event in my life with you. You know, when I got sober, you guys, my family wanted nothing to do with me. Now, the crap they're going to take off me years before I quit drinking. Had to walk away from Sandy. So, you know, I give my family is icing on the cake, let me tell you guys. And through Alcoholics Anonymous and making amends around here and the things that we do, it's all turning around for me now. But it took a long time for it to happen. So on my 20th AA birthday, it was Ryan's very first day down in Norman, Oklahoma, and he called me about 10:30 at night, and he said, "Oh, Grandmother, I'm so sorry to call you so late." And I said, "It is never too late to call your grandmother. Don't you ever think that." And he said, "Oh, Grandma, I wanted to wish you a happy 20th AA birthday." And you guys, I just stood there and cried like a baby. And he said, "Oh, Grandma, make you cry?" And I said, "You didn't make me cry. I'm crying because I'm so happy that you called me." And he said, "Oh, Grandma, we're so proud of you." And I thought, "Oh, stop." You know, but anyway, same thing happened on AA birth number 21, AA birth number 22, AA birth number 23, AA birth number 24. And I will tell you something, I wouldn't trade those phone calls for that 10,000. Well, that's not quite true, but you know what I'm talking about. Things with my family are very, very good today, let me tell you. And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that, let me tell you guys. But anyway, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska. I come from a wonderful home there in Nebraska. And you know, I was just a disruptive jerk when I was growing up. Always in trouble, getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. Remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning? It made me feel like I belonged. I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that. And I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm going to meet about Alcoholics Anonymous today. And I honored this podium by talking about alcoholism up here. But, you know, I use some drugs, too. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Bill Wilson's story, he talks about, and the powerful influence of alcohol and sedation, he wound up on the rocks. That is precisely what happened to me, folks. But anyway, I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about, and I loved about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here today. I can just feel it, you know. That's a one thing, girls, I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men, and I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. And you know, you guys, I'm 62 years old, and I have a boyfriend. You better well believe I have a boyfriend. He lives in New York, and I live in L.A., so we get along so well and stuff. So things haven't changed a whole lot in that arena, I got to tell you. But I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee, about 15 years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, AA, walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know. And this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding, you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you." And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd flown to Nashville and asked you. You know, I hear some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. Do all their drinking, and I said, shoot it through the keyhole with an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that feeling in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room today, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession intercession that you have. And it goes on to say, because you can literally avert death and misery for others. And I found this to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here today, I want to hear about it afterwards. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old and I had to get married. In my day, girls, you had to get married. There was no ifs, ands, and buts about that. It's just what we did and stuff. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. He was 17. I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis. He used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would have laid one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story. I need to share it. And some in that family had to get a job. And I didn't finish junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I'd love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have 1 ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here today and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession. I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people I take care of, nor the people that I work with in their ordinary circumstances. And what I had to tell you is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, you know, with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Nebraska, and I had that job for many, many years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, ran with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for your sick people. You're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to challenge Jim away what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking in about 5 seconds, laughing at the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I'm not talking about that piece of crap they had 10 years ago. I'm talking about the real Woodstock. And there will never be another one, trust me on that. The kids from the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I'm quite sure. And New York got when they're going to have this big event. And they tell these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you are not going to have this concert. Started hiring people from Nebraska. Thought I'd be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first drunk to sign up this deal. And find 9 girls I worked with to join me. And they had about 80 doctors from New York, and there we were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have easily filled up Babs, no problem whatsoever. And the drugs, it was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing, we were sharing narcotics and everybody else. But we had this great big semi-truck on that back lot of Woodstock. That was our hospital park back there. And I recall being that semi the entire week. But I do recall it was like to stand in front of the stage at night that Richie Havens sang Freedom and Joe Cocker and Country Joe, Santana, those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life one little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you wanted the truth. That's not true. That's a big fat lie. Do not tell him I said that, please. I was just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins, but drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lie for me standing here today and say anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun, I remember the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful. Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot begin to tell you. And you know, the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. I thought, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I get even with him for all the things he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud as I stand here today. And, you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. And he feels the same way I do, too, as a matter of fact. But I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story, but I tell you, and my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell those people, see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason. And I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. I will say that when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. That guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, you know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. He sat up for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell her what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you, the stoner's going to tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. And this was many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, in our country in the last year or so, there's been about 3 or 4 instances of super glue. I'm the original super glue person. I wear it like a badge of honor, for Christ's sakes. But anyway, I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off in 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off in 5 minutes is what it said. And I want this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. This guy... And I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place, man, I have super glue, and I laughed about it and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bed there, in our bedroom there in Lincoln. He called the police, and the cops were out in front of our home with their sirens. Going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. And California would not surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me to the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against or husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. One more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton. Anybody that's shrimp's going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy gets home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too, I got to tell you. I'm sorry, but he would have. For those of you who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 3 years ago. It was on the national news, and I was on the freeway. I had a wreck when I heard. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But, you know, we have an amends step in this program, and my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get in that airplane, get there, and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I'm telling you, but in this room today, and that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free what I had been done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you, for the first time in my sobriety, the promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous came through in my life. Anyone else have found out about that? Motives mean nothing here, folks. My motives sucked big time on that one, but I still got the promises, so go figure. It's action aid that counts around here, not motives and stuff. But anyway, I have to tell you guys a funny story. I went up to Lompoc Prison to speak a couple years ago, and as we all know, it's a men's federal penitentiary here in Central Coast, California, and they have this monthly speakers meeting, so they invite folks to drive up and share. So I drove up there. You have to go to the guard tower, and you have to push the button. They say, who are you and what is your business? And I told them, they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any weapons on you, any guns, knives, explosives? And I said, no. And they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any super glue on you? For the first time in my life, I was totally speechless, you know. Up in the guard tower laughing, the prisoners put them up to it and stuff. And I said, well, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. And they said, well, then you can come on in. And the prisoners took me to the meeting room, and they had this blackboard with this great big circle with a red slash. It said, no super glue in here tonight. You never know what's going to happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I divorced him one more time, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare. Is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse and I've studied alcoholism. I knew all about it before I became one. It shows me one more time tonight what our book said today, what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We do have this called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 24 years sober. And the day came to the hospital told me we had had all the crap we're going to take off of you. They said, Karen, you are absolutely pathetic, is what you are. You are the finest nurse on this staff. You have won awards for your nursing ability. What is the matter with you? You have a drinking problem. We're tired of reading about you in the paper. Drunk driving charges, bad checks, glue in husbands, all the crap that you're doing. Everything you do in Nebraska is in the paper, I'm sorry to say, and they knew my game, and they said, either go into a treatment center or you are out of here. We are not protecting you anymore. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I love more than anything in the whole world, and I cannot say that enough tonight, today. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work in a nursing home there in Lincoln. What I'm about ready to share with you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years of my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still in drugs in that nursing home, and it wasn't because I like drugs. It has nothing to do with anything. I was physically addicted to alcohol by now. I had to have this stuff. I couldn't go more than 3 hours without drinking. I couldn't drink at work, so I started stealing narcotics. It's just that damn simple. And I hated myself so bad, I cannot begin to tell you. And I was still in morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium I'd get my hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. And the day came to me, the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. Now, you take good care of the patients. You're a great nurse, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange, too, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange, too. And I threw my keys at them, and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital. hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview, got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I just maintained a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink, I had to take drugs, and I had no more choice in the end of it. And I will tell you guys right up front here today, the very thought that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up. And that's why I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff. But the day came for me when I got caught red-handed and stolen some morphine from the hospital. And this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they say, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done too, as a matter of fact. And long story short here, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story short, I'm sure I'm here today, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I have traveled the Midwest, I prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or doing. I'm still so sick in the head sometimes, I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I am still a very ill member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing on the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happen to me I would not repeat in this podium today, but I'm sure that you have the general idea. And 2 years rolled by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly have better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I gotta tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. I apparently was so physically sick I just passed down the streets is what happened. But before that happened, I remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there. And like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward, the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for many, many years, and I will tell you that's the day the alcoholic hell for me started. I lived in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses, demand they give me drugs for this withdrawal. They would not give me drug one. They said, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You need to fill around those tremors, and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me, and I will be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They got 10 members of AA to come and sit with me. And, you know, I just want to say something very quickly because I feel so strongly about this because it saved my life. Once in a while in Alcoholics Anonymous, I hear people say, not very many people, and I don't hear it that often. When I hear it, I want to throttle them by the neck. They say things like, we don't go unless the alcoholic calls us. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing here 24 years sober today. I never made any damn phone call. Where did that crap come from? It's good enough for our co-founders. By God, it's good enough for us. I think Bill got a hold of Bob. I don't think Bob got a hold of Bill, if I remember correctly. So I hope I never forget where I'm coming from around here. And my responsibility statement does indeed say, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. The nurses reached out, the alcoholics responded, and I believe it's a direct result of them standing here 24 years sober today. So I hope I never forget where I'm coming from around here. But anyway, I was not a quick study in the inpatient 30-day program, but I just fell in love with these people. They'd say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all I got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date, and they're absolutely accurate about that. But at 30 days of sobriety, I walked that official treatment program at that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys. Let me tell you, and thank God I went to a good one. You know, where I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize an orange person, I can assure you. And they used to bring the patients over to the hospital, and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking, look at her. I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you guys, you know what? In retrospect today, I am really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I pick up any drink. But I was not a quick study in the inpatient 30-day program due to my very rotten behavior. I was in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program. But I completed the inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program. I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active Washington of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We do what we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here today. But not in 1982. I could have cared less what these people thought. And you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love them, you know, old-timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. They literally saved my life, and boy, they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well, and I'll be internally grateful. But this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me up in an AA day. He said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA, read the book, and they don't need a sponsor. He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to go up and hear this man speak and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. But I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. I did pay it back. And I will tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that man literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I wouldn't have asked him. And I found myself walking across that convention floor and asked that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazy I never thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked if they brought me if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And sending my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And he said, Karen, I like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you because if I don't do it for you, you'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people, become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me, defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day in my recovery, really, to begin in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people yes, sir. Trust me, I do not. And one more time, God do if I can't do for myself. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. You might as well start with my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. I ended up sponsoring a lot of women in that town. I am not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program, and every one of those women are still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I tried to tell this man, I cannot go with that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and tell those people you've been sober for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room today. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I asked for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, to tell the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 20 years ago, this last April, when one more time I was shirked in front of the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And that is a gift from AA. I not deserve that, but by God, I intend to take it. And, you know, I came here to visit a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. If you're new in this room today, I want you to know that you are in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. This is the best place to be and be sober. And I know that's very, very true because I get the honor of speaking all the world. And I welcome you and I hope that you stay. I told Clancy on the phone one day, I want to move to L.A., live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd fit like a glove, not been wrong about that either. But on the Pacific Group, I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I'm being treated with their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I deserve, no, by God, I'm taking all of them. You know, early on, my sponsor told me, he says, Karen, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous in its entirety is a spiritual program. Where are you at with that? Are you praying at all? This was on day two that I had him. I said, no, I do not pray. I do not believe in God. I won't be doing that stuff. He said, would you like to get a different sponsor? I said, no. And he said, you get on your knees in the morning, get on your knees at night, and you pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. Don't pray for things. Don't pray for yourself. Pray for to stay sober, and you pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And I started doing that stuff, and I said the magic words, okay. You know, I said, yes, sir, and stuff. So I started doing that for 4 years in a row. I on my knees every single day praying, and I called Clancy on the phone still, when I still lived in Nebraska, and I'd say, this is not working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. He said, Karen, are you staying sober one day, Tom, in Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time, these little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself at the World Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in Montreal, Canada. If you guys haven't experienced that those conferences, my God, go the next one. It's something none of us should ever miss and stuff. And I've driven straight through from Lincoln, Nebraska with five people that I sponsored, six alcoholic women in one car, quack, 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 and the whole way to Montreal. We only had $100 apiece. We had no place to stay. But by God, we were going to that World Conference. If we had to sleep outside, we were going to get up there. And anyway, got up to the convention center. We found an apartment to rent for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 65,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. I looked around myself, and I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous and absolutely awe of this program. And down in the football field, they were practicing for a flag ceremony, and Clancy was helping them direct that flag ceremony. And I ran down to tell him hi. It just made people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm from Nebraska, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today on people from all over the world. And I ran back up and joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this. As long as I live, I will never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 65,000 sober people go absolutely crazy. I looked around myself. I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people, and all the people in between. And they all seemed to be loving this thing so very, very much. And I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with me? Why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I, too, wanted to love Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes. I did not try and stop. And for the first time with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me love this program as much as these people do. And I will tell you guys, in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I really believe the old adage that we seem ready to see, we hear and ready to hear, and not before. I also believe the actions my sponsor gave me got me to that point. It's like you do it till you believe it and stuff. And I have taught that God every day sincerely since, because I believe what my sponsor has taught me. I get a daily reprieve, and that's all that I get. And for one solid second, my world stopped. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, who literally could not get sober, who literally could not quit drinking. And there she was, 2.5 years sober. I personally believe that this program is divinely inspired. How could anybody be around here as long as I have and not believe that stuff? And I know that book is. There's no doubt in my mind about that and stuff. But, so anyway, I started praying to a God that I did not even believe in and came to believe in my very own higher power and stuff. But, you know, I remember asking Clancy, what is God's will? He said, how the hell am I supposed to know? I'm not God. But I have to believe that when I'm doing what's in front of me, what God gives me, what God puts upon my plate, that's got to be God's will for me. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, why don't you just start answering the damn phone for you, just for starters. Answer the phone when it rings. You know, I don't screen my phone calls today. When that phone rings and I'm home, it gets picked up and stuff. Anyway, so I've been taught to answer that telephone in all conditions. And when I finally got a telephone, I sure didn't want to answer it. It was bill collectors. But as a direct result of answering that phone, I'm $86,000 out of debt in Alcoholics Anonymous. But so I started answering that phone. And about 12 years ago, we had a trouble nursing crisis in Southern California, and we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to bitch about it. You know, we're like, we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. But this one particular week, I'd work 72 hours, and I worked the night shift over there. We do most of our transplants at night because it's just easier to do them at night and stuff, but because of organ availability and so forth. But anyway, I had that night off. I went home. I went to bed early. Went to meet early in the evening. I went home, and I went to bed early. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought, I am not answering that damn phone. It's my boss wanting me to come to work, or it's somebody I sponsor wanting to whine about something. I'm not picking up the damn phone. Well, I've been taught to pick up the phone, and my head told me, pick up the phone, somebody's in trouble. I'm so glad I did, you guys. The most precious thing happened to me. This shows you the value of answering your phone under all conditions and stuff. But sure enough, it was my boss, and she said, I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. I need your help. We're going to do a liver transplant on a girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. I said, I have worked 72. She said, Karen, I don't want to hear it. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. And the phone went dead. Well, I was going to call my sponsor, but I want to talk to him about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know that he told me nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen. See, there's a first time for everything, Clancy, you know. But anyway, I just went to work, and I'm so glad that I didn't, because the most precious thing happened to me. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to bring our little patient down to surgery. And we had a jet come from New York with the liver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And so anyway, he called me in the back, and he said, you're not going to believe all the people in this family. And I thought, well, that's nice if they have the support. And he said, there's like 80 people with this family. And I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, if you know the truth. But I went out front to get my little patient. And the first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible for myself. And I ever so gently fell in love with this little baby girl. And she was so sick, she had her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver thing and needed a transplant and stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, and you didn't want to be here, you selfish person. I hated myself so bad at that moment, I cannot begin to tell you. I thought I'm going to be the best nurse I've ever been before in my life tonight. And by God, I was too. But anyway, and the like 80, 85 people of this family, and I thought how highly unusual and stuff. But anyway, in this little girl's arms, she had a baby bear and had a blanket wrapped around that bear, hanging on him for dear life. And I'd been over and I talked to her and I said, oh, you brought your little baby bear down to surgery and tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, no, just the bear, you know. But anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room, and that mom was an absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this baby looked at me and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that little girl the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And she just worried about you. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids. He is just a delight to work with. So when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started. And his bag was called Bear Juice. She thought that was real funny. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. And it was really quite painless for her, if you know the truth. But I must tell you guys that 6 hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we did for that baby. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And boy, we said some prayers on that one, let me tell you. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And 6 days rolled by. I knew she was still alive and stuff. And you know, we have a rule at UCLA. You may not get involved with these transplant patients. Then when the organs come from, we cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. The other people take over at that time. And you know, I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? So I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. And when she was 6 days post-op from that transplant, up that baby's room, I opened the door of that child's room, and I could not believe it was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been to surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had diapers hanging around her knees. She had a baby bottle in one hand, and she had that bear in the other arm, and she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And I stood in that hall, and I just cried like a baby. It is not cool to stay the nursing staff ball, let me tell you. That whole room full of people in there. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And it all made sense to me now. And I was in that room like a flash. And I asked the mom, I said, I didn't care if I got fired. And I asked the mom, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 80 people driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the LA area. And they showed me one more time what this thing is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all it's about. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I asked the mom, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh my God, her baby up for the first time. What a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I walked over to this little girl, and she stopped dead in her tracks, and she looked at me, and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I was standing in my scrub clothes. It scared the hell out of me, didn't I? I said, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I came up here to see how you're doing. And you guys, she gave me her little bear, and she said, you take him home and take care of me. He's so sick he needs a nurse to take care of him. I know why she gave me the bear, to get me the hell away from her. But I told the mom, I said, I cannot take that baby's bear home. My God, this bear went through this baby's liver transplant. We had it by her little head in a plastic bag her entire surgery. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear, that that bear became my most prized possession from Alcoholics Anonymous. Then it got to be too damned important to me. It gets to be too important. We got to get rid of it, folks. And my little granddaughter says to me, Grandma, can I have that bear? And I said, it's Grandma's bear, Brandy. And she says, she knows the whole story. And she says, but I want that bear so bad. And I said, Grandma, we'll buy you 100 bears. It's my bear. She said, but I don't want 100 bears. I want that bear. And I said, it's Grandma's bear. I thought, oh, I can't believe I said it to my granddaughter. But, you know, it got so bad at me, I talked to my sponsor about it. What's a 50-year-old woman talking to her sponsor about a damn bear for? You know, my sponsor told me, give her that damn bear right this minute. You're the most selfish person I've ever seen before in my life. You got to give it away to keep it. You got the memory, give her the damn bear right now. I don't want to hear any more about it. And I thought, that's it, I'm changing sponsors. That is the last straw. Anyway. I thought, I need to reciprocate here. I obviously wasn't prepared for a birthday party, and I had something in my pocket. My sponsor gave me, when I was 5 years sober, a medallion for 5 years of sobriety, and so I gave him my medallion. He's in my pocket at work. It's because there's narcotic use in that medallion, and I don't tell anybody in this room, you know, when I open that cupboard, sometimes my eyes look like firecrackers, so I can grab that and remember where I'm coming from here. But anyway, I gave her that, and the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. My sponsor on the telephone, in about 3 hours, he had about 50 cars in front of UCLA, and I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous that night, the Pacific group. But no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. I know that little girl is doing very, very well and stuff. And the point I'm trying to make here is I could have missed the whole damn thing. How many times in my life have I missed something because I wouldn't take a simple action like picking up the telephone? That makes me crazy if I think about it long. But people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know no greater thing to say to them than where our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me. I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately today as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't know those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love this program more than in the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to shut my mouth here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row in Nebraska to where I stand in Palm Springs. Where am I? Rancho Mirage? Where am I? Cathedral City. And I think that but for the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.
Hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.